Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Episode 61 today, guys. Thank you for checking in and hope my fellow Americans and everyone else celebrating Thanksgiving had a great one last week. I myself kept it simple and joined a friend at his house, had turkey in a bag, which sounds kind of disgusting, but it tastes pretty amazing. And I'm thankful for you guys listening in today. It makes me really happy to know you guys are tuning in and enjoying and improving their businesses in Asia. So thanks again for being here with me. So this week's show, we have the second part of a two-part series where we interview some of the speakers from the Start Me Up Venture Forum in Hong Kong. This one today, we have Richard Robinson, a veteran in the Chinese internet and startup space, and a really fun guy to talk to all around. I've had a chance to catch him previously over the past couple of years around China, and I'm happy to get him on the show. We had a little bit of a limited time in the VIP room before the event started, but Richard is very charismatic and shares some really good inspiration and insights for those Westerners who want to conquer the dragon in Chinese tech startup space. So let's listen into this fun interview. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have a mentor and friend of mine, Richard Robinson, down here in Hong Kong from Beijing. So thanks for coming down.
Great to be here, Mike. It's awesome. You know, we know each other from back in the day as a mentor, mentee, and sort of, you know, American Lawai entrepreneur in the Middle Kingdom. So yeah. It was a pleasure to kind of pop around the corner and go, oh, that guy, of course.
Yeah, I mean, nice. I just saw you on the agenda here, and I was like, I got to get you on the show while you're here. And, you know, I was just giving a little bit of briefing of our listeners. They're I think they would agree, mostly white male, you know, European American, trying to make it big in Asia, or at least curious to listen to the show. And I think it would be fun for us to have you share some insights. So like you said, you've been also, you know, I really thank you as mentoring with China Accelerator and all the other entrepreneurs. I know you spend a lot of time meeting with them in Beijing, and maybe some listeners can one day reach out to you there if they're in town.
Love it. You know, for me, it's, you know, an absolute joy to be able to share some of my experiences. You know, I mean, who knows? Nobody knows, you know, most companies that, you know, start fail, and even most funded companies fail. So most of the time don't know what to do, but sometimes I know what not to do. I'm just kind of covered in, you know, scabs and calluses and scar tissue that's sort of like armor. Yeah, and exactly. I just, all I can sometimes do is don't go there be dragons. But sometimes I hope I can, you know, give a little bit of a useful guidance.
So. Sure. Sure. So, you know, you have a very full background. Maybe first you can talk about your current ventures.
Mm. Sure. Yolu. Yeah. So Yolu in Chinese, literally it comes from two words, you know, 朋友, the yo, friend, and 通讯录, like address book, you know, like sort of list. So that was the original vision of the company. I tell people I started a company with the co-founder of the Facebook of China, and we partner with the Twitter of China to be LinkedIn of China. So my co-founder started RenRen. He was the COO, CTO there. And we had an original vision of doing a social network on mobile. And we attacked that space via the address book. And interestingly enough, I found a founder that we started same time as WhatsApp with pretty much the same feature set, which was status updates in the address book. And the WhatsApp has quickly realized that people were bust-a-macating their app by using it for something that they hadn't intended, which was they were messaging through the status updates. So they, you know, oftentimes it's a good lesson that whenever the users start, you know, using your app for something that you hadn't intended it for, that actually is probably the direction that you should go. So they went down that path, but not us. We stuck with the address book for about 3 years, and we got to about 15 million users, but we realized that we had lost it. Really, the future of social and mobile is messaging, which 5 years ago, you know, it's so crystal clear now. It's almost redonkulously just silly that we hadn't seen it then. But back, you know, 5 years ago, we thought it was done. We thought, you know, hey, there's Skype, there's QQ, there's all these other messengers. It's been around for, you know, a decade plus. It's one and done, right? But, you know, it's really interesting is that with the whole smartphone, you know, paradigm. You know, it's a completely different way of approaching how people do messaging. And they just removed and added a few different things that made it a completely different user set or user experience. So, you know, it's, you know, worth hundreds of billions of dollars in aggregate with, you know, WeChat and Line and Kakao and yeah. Viber and WhatsApp. And so we realized that we had lost. So we switched to professional networking, and that's when we did a deal with Weibo. So we're sort of piggybacking, which was another lesson, was that we launched this online professional network, which, if I do say so myself, was excellent. I mean, we had a great team and we had 3 years of experience, and we shifted all that from social to professional. And it was so awesome an app that nobody used it. I mean, like, I couldn't even beg people to use the thing. And I learned a lesson that with social, it's easy to get people on board and you don't need that many users for it to be an interesting experience. With a professional network, it's a completely different experience, in that you have to get out of kind of the force of gravity and get into outside the atmosphere and you know, there's a lot of resistance. Like, you have to put your resume online and you have to invite people. And it's kind of like you're doing an errand and then you invite all your business contacts to do errands, and there's still no value yet until there's some sort of growth in the network. So until it reaches a critical mass, in the early days of LinkedIn, probably the first 5 to 7 years, it was a lot of resistance until it became so obvious that you needed to be on LinkedIn that then everybody jumped in. So the way we did that was, instead of trying to create, you know, drops of water that turned into a puddle, that turned into a pond, that turned into a lake, that turns into a reservoir, we just thought, hey, right next door, there's a rushing 5-grade torrent, you know, which is Weibo, which is kind of like the de facto white collar network. Let's just piggyback off of that. And we did a deal with them. We're kind of drafting off of their, you know, half billion user base to create a professional network inside there.
It's true. It's like, you just got to keep on pushing forward and finding that market fit and
chewing glass while staring into the abyss. Right. Yes. So it's interesting. So this is my 8th startup. So I've had, you know, the luck of being directly involved in 8 startups, 3 as an exec of companies that were, you know, small private companies that went public, and 5 times as a founder. And I sold 3 of those companies I founded to publicly listed companies. Number 4 was a mercy kill. And number 5, you know, is still going. We just turned 6, actually. And for me, I'm 47 years old. I've been in the game for 20 years now. And I always had, if only, if only, if only, if only, if only I had an excellent technical co-founder. And I did. I had one of the best. You know, he took Ren public, 5 billion market cap, 100 million users, 1,300 staff, 3,000 servers. It worked. If only we had funding. We had plenty of access to capital. If only we had a great team. We had a great team. If only we had a team that we could actually keep and there wasn't high churn. We were able to retain our employees. If only we were in the right great market. If only, if only, if only. Check, 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 check. And it still was an absolute grind until we actually found our product market fit. So I think it's a good lesson, you know, even for me, who I'm doing a lot of psychological coaching to, you know, entrepreneurs, as much as I am, you know, strategic and sort of executional, you know, coaching, that, you know, the default setting for entrepreneurship is failure. And not just failure, but like glorious, miserable, magnificent failure that a lot of people maybe have never even encountered before. Mm-hmm. I see the type of people that are drawn to entrepreneurship now are people that have never tasted the bitterness of like absolute defeat in their life, maybe ever, right? Yeah. They've always sort of excelled at everything. And then they come in and entrepreneurship is glamorized. And then, you know, they go to a networking event. How's everything going? Oh, it's going great. We're crushing it. Metrics. And then how's it really going? Mommy, make it stop. Mommy, it hurts. It hurts. Right. Yeah, yeah, and yeah. Nobody wants to admit it because they think that, wow, everybody else is crushing it. What's the matter with me? And the fact is, there's nothing the matter with you. Yeah. It's supposed to be sort of kind of miserable in some ways. Right. And that's okay. But I always thought, well, if only I was able to sort of leverage all my experience and my connections and, you know, all of the kind of momentum I've had to basically eliminate that. And somebody told me something once, which was, even the guy that's winning the marathon, he's experiencing as much pain as the guy, you know, who's doing it in 6 hours, right? The guy who's got a 2:20 time, he's just running faster, but he's hurting still, right? So, sure. You know, everybody's hurting.
Right? Yes. And it's like exactly like a marathon, right? I think, I don't know if it's a good way to think of it, but, you know, sometimes just staying in a game.
Yes. No, it's a great way to think of it, right? It's like, for the most part, at the you know, I've done 4 marathons for whatever that's worth, but at the last third of it is mostly a mental. Mm-hmm. It's mostly mental, right? And it's, you know, you've done your training, you have the, you know, ability to be able to do it, but it's your mind mostly that's blocking you. So.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because I think the biggest competitor is yourself, right?
It's certainly.
Like you think you got to get past that limiting belief that you can't do it.
I mean, I think that's one thing that I think a lot of entrepreneurs should realize is that if you're really in a space where you have to constantly sniff out what the competition is doing and you're afraid of them, you're probably in the wrong space and the market is just too small, right? Like, you know, and you shouldn't have to worry about a large competitor because you can move faster than them. And if there's another smaller competitor, then, you know, the market is just too limited. So you're really fighting against yourself.
Yeah. So, all right. Maybe we'll get you back on the show in the future. I think I want to kind of at least get a question about Western entrepreneurs, you know, the quote unquote white guy coming to China to you know, make the next Facebook of China. Like, I think you're a good person to ask this question. What do you suggest those guys listening maybe that have that idea?
There's very few foreign entrepreneurs in China relative, right? And it's really not because I'm anything special. I'm just too stupid or stubborn to do anything else. Yeah. And the fact is, China mostly doesn't kind of need us, at least for internal stuff. I mean, it's such a robust ecosystem. I think the first thing that needs to be said is that in Beijing, there is no question, qualitatively or quantitatively, that not only is Beijing the Silicon Valley of China and of Asia, but it is the number 2 Silicon Valley in the world. So there's a study last week by Atomico Ventures, founder of Skype is in there, and there's almost 20 unicorns, companies worth more than $1 billion that have sprouted out of Beijing in the last decade. Silicon Valley is number 1 with 30 plus, but distant third is New York with 6. And then, you know, there's no place even close. And, you know, Shanghai or Shenzhen or anywhere else in China is not even close. So Beijing's a very, very robust ecosystem where Baidu has 42,000 employees alone, right? And there's dozens of other companies that are unicorns that were there already before. I mean, Baidu's not even counted in those 20 in the last decade because they were founded in 99, right? And Sina and Sohu and NetEase and, you know, the list goes on. So it's a very, very robust ecosystem. So where's the fit as a foreign entrepreneur competing in China against other Chinese entrepreneurs? I mean, wow. It's like, as a foreign guy, there's 2 things you can do that give you an advantage. One is you can be the international guy. If you speak Chinese and you want to be sort of the bridge, or as my buddy Porter Erisman, he was the international guy at Alibaba. He has a great documentary called Crocodile and the Yangtze. You should definitely interview him. I'll connect you up with him. Okay. He says bridge sounds way too smooth. We're cartilage. We're getting crunched between China realities and international expectations. So you're either the cartilage, or this is the most interesting and probably, you know, one of my next ventures is you're taking this sort of kung fu ball of power and you're just accumulating it and then pushing that out around the world. So China is an engine, an amazing engine for R&D and development, and especially in the smartphone, you know, mobile internet space, there really is a world-class group of devs that you can get together to build stuff and then push that out to the rest of the world. So I think there's an opportunity. And, you know, let's do another let's do a follow-up call and I can blather away about some of my other scar tissue and other thing. But anyway, give it up for Mike, everybody. Come on.
Okay,
that's great. Thanks for
Thank you, Richard, for sharing. I wanted to get more speakers on the Starting Up HK Venture Forum, but due to this merger with Social Agent and Unchained Apps, I had to rush back for some urgent matters. I couldn't get more interviews that I had lined up done. But I still have tons of great shows coming, weeks to come, and mixing it up with some Hong Kong business updates and learning sessions, as well as some fun and insightful interviews. I always appreciate feedback, so please shoot me an email at mike@globalfromasia.com. And if you enjoy the show, please leave me a review on iTunes. And it not only makes me feel really amazing and happy and motivated to keep going, but it also helps others find the show in the rankings with the iTunes search. So thanks for supporting the show, and see you next week. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.